Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Healing Spirit and Beyond. This is Roxy's Wicker. I'm so glad that you've joined us this evening. And this is so cool tonight because this is the first time since the show has started that I am actually sitting in the same room as my co-host. I am actually over sitting down and making all sorts of really cool crafted goodies, love potions, room sprays and all kinds of fun stuff at Carrie's house. So instead of saying, "Hey, Carrie, how's the weather?" I can look out the window. But hey, Carrie, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yes, we've been here tonight. And not only are we together tonight, but we have
someone that's actually standing by that is in person. So we kind of have live audience as well tonight.
This is pretty cool. To be sitting in the same room. But you are tuned in tonight to our special show, Exploring the Ghost of the Meeting House Hill Cemetery, which is located in Antrim, New Hampshire. And if you haven't visited this cemetery and you're local to New England, it is one you definitely want to put on your list. You don't want to miss it. And Sherry, when was the last time that you had visited?
Actually, it was about a week ago. We had brought up a friend that was really interested in the cemetery and the story that she was hearing. So we were sharing with her some of the stories that we were hearing from our tours up there and our research that we were having up there. So I tried to bring her along one night, and it definitely didn't let us down. There was a lot more to it going on than we expected there was going to be. So I guess she definitely got more than what she asked for that night. Definitely a place that it's never let down with the spirits knowing who you are. and wanting to be part of your visit. There's, you know, one spirit that we've all had the pleasure of coming in contact with, and it is of a child, and her name is Jenny, and I think everybody that goes in there and connects with her just absolutely falls in love with her. And Roxy, I know when you went up there, you also had a personal experience with her as well.
I did, and it's one of those places where every time I've gone, there has been some sort of experience, and certainly the experiences I've been having with her have been pretty constant every time I go. So for those of you that aren't familiar with the town of Antrim, I just want to give you an idea of this little quaint country town. It's part of the Conticook River Valley, and it is, you know, typical New England town. It has two white churches, Brown Church, and it was settled in the early 1700s. The settlers went up the Merrimack River to Londonderry and then kind of spread out from there. So there are a lot of Scotch-Irish people that live there in the village. And this cemetery is located appropriately on Meeting House Hill, which is today this long dirt road that pretty much goes out into the woods. And the site is still there where the Meeting House used to be, although it no longer stands. And this is the burial ground that's right next to it. Again, surrounded by very thick woods up on the high hill, and very, very nice area to visit. So the first time that I visited the cemetery, it was just my husband and I, and God, I think it was probably 8 or 9 years ago that we actually had stopped into the cemetery to check it out. It was one that was on my list that I had to get to. And it was beautiful, I think it was summertime, beautiful summer day, and we're walking through the burying ground. We went through the gates, sure, quite beautiful and very impressive. And as we started walking around, you know, you kind of get the sense, I mean, certainly for me, I feel like sometimes there's somebody wandering around, you know, you're not quite alone. So I'm totally open to that. But when I was standing at some of the children's graves in there, what I was feeling was definitely rather unexpected. I had my hands to my sides, just looking around, reading the gravestones, taking a few pictures. And as I thought to this particular group of children's graves, it was as if I felt this little hand just sliding right into my own hand, this smaller hand, just kind of reaching and grasping for my hand. And I'm like, you know, what could that possibly be? I looked down, you know, and there was obviously no one there that I could see, but I could clearly start to close my hand and feel like I was closing my hand around someone else's hand, again, a smaller child's hand. So, you know, again, being open to that, I'm like, well, okay, you know, I'll just hold their hand. Maybe they're looking for reassurance or the sense that someone's there with them. And as I walked around, they were walking with me, and it was as if, you know, I was walking with them as if they were still standing there right next to me. And again, I did not see anybody. So, you know, I took some notes, took some pictures of the burial ground, and still, as I walked around, I still felt the hands in mine. When I was finished walking around, I walked back over to the gate to head back out and get into my car, and that was where I parted with the spirit that was there, talking to the spirit that was there. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to try and find out more, which is usually what I say when I leave a burying ground. I don't know an awful lot about this to go back and do further research. Like, okay, so I'm going to come back and see what I can find out, if there's anything I can do to assist you. And I wasn't doing any dowsing at that time. I was just doing my initial visit. But I was totally taken by having a sense that there was some little hand that was reaching out for mine. And Carrie, I don't know, have you felt the hand of the kid yourself there?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, it's funny because she does. She absolutely holds your hand. It's almost like a security for her, you know, knowing that people are coming and paying attention to her, because she's definitely wanting that attention. You know, we've taken other people in there, and, you know, including my brother and my sister, and she absolutely, like, just attached with my brother. And when I say attached, I don't mean like she attached herself and, you know, he had to be smudged or whatever. I mean, attached as far as she was clung to him the whole time that we're in there. And I really think that, you know, a big part of that is he's a father himself to a little girl. And, you know, they pick up on that stuff. They know that stuff. And, you know, he just has that loving, caring, you know, way about him. So she definitely clung to him that night. And she, you know, she's, my sister has felt her hanging on to her pant leg before. And then, you know, the lady that we brought in about a week ago that we brought into the cemetery, she instantly, when I brought her over to the stone, she instantly, she's like, oh, my God, I just want to cry. And, it, you know, you do because she's so, you know, she's so alone and she's, you know, really sad and she has not connected with her parents, sadly. And so she, you know, this woman is intuitive as well. So she instantly picked up on the beautiful, beautiful detail of this little girl. And so, you know, the rest of the night, we're, you know, we always invite her to come along with us. We always make sure that we keep it open, that she can, you know, be anywhere in that cemetery with us. But we also let her know that, you know, it's her place to stay. And, you know, when those gates close, that's the barrier. And we do that with all the spirits that we come in contact with them in there. You know, there's been a lot of things that have happened in there and, you know, a lot of personal things. You know, Roxy has a spirit that she connects with on a very personal level named Elizabeth. And it was funny because when Roxy and I first started talking and hanging out, I myself have a spirit that when I go into the cemetery, I always connect with her, and her and I are on such a great level when I go in there. That is also named Elizabeth. And there's a lot of children in the cemetery, and it's extremely sad. But she's kind of, we've learned that she's like the keeper of the children, and she watches over them, and she makes things, you know, okay for them. And I just absolutely, you know, there's a big oak tree at the bottom of the cemetery, and we call it Elizabeth's tree because she's always down there. And she just is so, so soft and so loving. And since Jenny has been unable to, you know, meet back up with her parents, she kind of has been taken under the care of Elizabeth. And she's very, very protective of Jenny, and that's wonderful. That's great. And I always make sure that they're still connected whenever I go in there. Have you ever come across Elizabeth when you've been in there, Roxy?
I have, and, you know, when I did, I wasn't really sure who it was. And in going back with you, I was able to figure out who it was by going through the dowsing and doing the EVPs that we did in there. And again, like you said, you know, very sweet spirit, someone, you know, who you're not afraid of. You almost feel reassured that they're there. And, you know, to me, I always find that there are spirits in the burying grounds that are kind of what I like to call the go-to spirit. They're the real gatekeepers that are there. And, you know, once you've made their acquaintance, they're the ones that introduce you to what's going on in the burying ground. So that's kind of how I pictured her. Because that was the interaction that I initially had with her, and then finding out who she was really great. I'm like, okay, I totally understand what's going on here.
Yeah, I just absolutely love her energy and, you know, how soft she is with people that go in there. You know, and we talk about how the children that are in there and, you know, a spirit like Elizabeth, but we have also come across some spirits that aren't so, you know, happy. And I don't want to say anything on the lines of, you know, they're associated with anything of that, you know, demon or devil or whatnot. It's so not on that line, and I would never reference it on that line. But, you know, they're just unhappy spirits. They're unsettled and they're unhappy. And, you know, my sister and I last year worked with a farmer that is in there all summer long we worked with him. I'm trying to figure out why he was, like, so mean. And,
especially towards my sister. It was a lot more towards my sister than myself. And so when we started, like, talking more to him and doing the EVPs, it just wasn't making sense. Nothing was making sense of why he was being so mean to her. You know, she would go in there, she would feel her hair being tugged, she would feel being pushed, research for him, and try figuring out what his story was. And sadly, we couldn't, come up with anything. So one night we went in there, and I think we were probably in the cemetery like 4 hours, just sitting at the back edge of the cemetery where he is, trying to figure out exactly what is going on. And I was getting my information from another spirit that was in there. So we came and found out that he was actually killed because of things that he had done to his daughter. And, something that a father or anybody should never do to a child. And so my sister resembles his daughter. And he was just, and even when we were in there last week, he was still on that fact of knowing who I was. And when I brought up Tasha's name, you could feel the energy shift extremely quickly. And she resembles her. And, we're like, she's not your daughter. She's not related to you. This has no connection. Trying to explain this to him, but it's hard. It's hard to explain to a spirit that, you have passed, your daughter, lived on past your years, and, she's buried somewhere else. She is not even in the same cemetery as he is. And I'm sure there's reasons for that. But he is just so mean to her, and he takes it out on her of what happened to him, even though that he was the reasoning of his own death. So that brings me to, our recent, trip in there last week when, we brought a guest in. And, we're very, very thankful when we go in there. We're extremely cautious. And, we don't disturb any of the spirits in there. We always ask that people never do. We always ask that people, be polite. Act as if, someone's treating you that way. And sadly, we've learned that people have gone in there, and they have disturbed a lot, and they've opened up doors that should never have been opened. And when we went down to Elizabeth's tree, Elizabeth wasn't there, and that really startled me. It really shook me a lot. And when I looked up, there's just this beautiful branch that is the biggest one that comes out of this tree, and there was a guy hanging from the tree, and he had a burlap bag on around his head. And so I freaked out. It's not something that you're ready to look up and see. And then, the woman that was with me, like I said, she's very in tune. And the spirit just kept circling around me, making me feel dizzy. It was just a very, very unsettling situation. And before we even left there, we sat down underneath her tree trying to keep contact with Elizabeth. She was very faint that night because she was being blocked. Jenny wouldn't come down over the hill because of the stuff that was going on down below. And then we realized that it was the farmer that has so much hatred towards my sister. He was the one hanging from the tree. And then we realized that he's the one, that was the reasoning of his death, was hanging. He was showing us that. And for whatever reason, that's all he would show us all the whole time that we're in there. And while we're in there, pictures were taken in the, we actually see children's faces and orbs, and we've got a great picture of him, and it looks like, a man leaning up against a tree, and it looks like he's hanging. I will post that picture. I do have permission to use that picture. I will post that for you all to see, and I will point out, all the details on that picture. But it was a week later that we started looking at that picture, and we're all, I think, we're kind of like taken by it. But really, out of any other thing in that whole place, there's only two spirits that really like get right on me when I get in there. And I think more so because they know my ability and they know that I can tap into them quicker. you know, there was one time that we're up there and things were just really weird that night, and we decided to head out, you know, earlier than we usually do. And as we were leaving, we got right to the gate, and it felt like someone just came up, pushed me right on the back. I could feel both hands push me into the gate, and I just hit my shoulder when I fell into the gate. And honestly, I have no hatred towards it. I'm not mad about it. I did not feel like, oh my gosh, I cannot go back in there because of this. But rather than, you know, I was like, I have to figure out what is wrong. I have to figure out why they are hurt so bad. And I know Roxy, you know, wrote a lot in her book about, you know, the cemetery, like she said. And do you want to share what you found with the outbreak of the children in town?
Sure. Well, there's been a whole number of things that have happened in Antrim leading up to the events of the summer of 1800. Because it was such an isolated outpost up there on top of the hill, and again, you know, imagine these people going and settling in the wilderness. You know, when we think about the wilderness today, it's very different from what it was in the 1700s. And there were lots of issues with people that were suffering from poverty. There were people that were dealing with the wild animals that were there. There was a time in the town's history that was called the Dark Day, and the town treasurer took off with all of the money that had been invested by the people who were living there and was never caught again. And by the late 1700s, there were about 50 to 60 families that were there, and now picture the summer of 1800. The summer of 1800, with all those families that were there with children, and we go back and we look at the date of July 23rd to September 23rd of that year, there were so many funerals for all the children that were dying from the dysentery outbreak that had happened. In that entire summer, from again, those two dates, there were 65 children that died. 50 of them are buried in the Meeting House Cemetery. Most of them do not have gravestones, but it is probably about 25 to 30 gravestones that you can see for the children. And you walk along the row and you'll see, you know, July 1800, August 1800, September 1800, and you'll see entire families just wiped out. It was pretty bad, and doctors typically did not want to come and expose themselves to the disease, so it was really up to the community to pretty much sit it out and wait for it to, you know, work its way out of the community. So that was one of the most striking things that I found when I went back and researched the cemetery after initially visiting it. And to me, that quickly explained to me why, as I was scanning a child's grave from the 1800s, that someone was standing there holding my hand, whether they were looking for comfort or direction or reassurance, or even gratitude that someone had stopped at their grave to remember them, was, you know, it was very deeply moving. And then when you looked at some of the gravestones, one thing that I remember, and I did post the photographs in the book that I wrote, the graves themselves had little faces on them of almost what looked like sleeping children, and they were in coffin boxes. So you'd have their head and shoulder with their little sad, solemn face inside a coffin box. And then some of the stones, you know, we're talking 1800s, so now the stones are, you know, well over 200 years old. Some of them had to be fit back together. Some of them had metal screws holding them together, and some of them were barely legible. So, you know, think about their story is really being lost to time. And, you know, to not only have one child in a family pass, but to have all your children, as many as three or four children in the family over a period of, you know, the summertime, is incredibly devastating. And, you know, to me, when I talk about children's ghosts, you know, I really have a strong belief that when you're contacting and being contacted by a children's ghost, there is nothing more pure than that, and that children themselves are very open to spiritual energy and spiritual connections. So I am sure that a lot of them are aware that their brothers and sisters had passed. And, you know, there is that sadness that can sometimes permeate the cemetery. And I know I certainly felt emotional, not just because I had the hand there, but I was looking at, you know, all of these graves from 1800, and I was like, what happened here? So, unfortunately, the back history there is quite sad for all of the graves that are there. And there's no doubt in my mind that has a lot to do with what goes on in there. But also, you know, you have to think of, you know, how fragile and how ill these children were. And now they're, you know, we like to say, I know people like to say, you know, they were in a better place. To me, the better place would, you know, they would have lived out their lives. But I think that has attracted some of the more, shall we say, not so friendly spirits there in the burying ground, because I know when I've been communicating with the children, all of a sudden we'll get that shadow person that is appearing at the back of the burying ground, and all of a sudden, you know, the child is gone. And, you know, they seem, in my opinion, to be afraid of some of the other spirits that are there, which can be very, very intense, as you were saying, Carrie. So, yeah, so that's some of the backstory behind the burial ground.
Yeah, and during that time, there was also the only inn that was in town actually burnt. It was a massive fire. And I actually got to learn that through newspapers that my great-grandparents kept and then my grandparents kept, and it was handed down to me. And I was, you know, we're looking through them, and it was talking about this fire that broke out, you know, with the inn. And, you know, not only did that cause people to close down other things, because now everybody that was coming through town couldn't stay. There was no place for them to stay. Everybody that worked at the inn now lost their jobs. That includes people that were working on the property outside, you know, lost their jobs. So it was, you know, it was a very hardworking town, and it was split in two sections. And it was the north and the south, very, very religious. It was, you know, we've gotten, I don't even know how many EVPs talking about the Bible and talking about the church and, you know, making sure that you live by the Bible. And, you know, it's amazing that you can find so much history when you actually connect with the spirits. You know, and that's what we learn when we go into the cemetery. And, you know, we don't just go in and be like, hey, are you here? Like, nope, nobody's here, and just walk out. You know, we do a lot to interact with these, you know, spirits and find out what exactly is wrong and why they're feeling the way that they're feeling, or maybe nothing's wrong, and maybe they're just fine, and, you know, they're just excited to see someone actually paying attention to them. And like I said, you know, there's spirits in there that are, you know, they're just angry, and that's okay, you know. It's their right to be angry, but never would I say that they're, you know, violent or, you know, trying to be the whole, like, demonic, and, you know, it's nothing on that level. You know, there's also a story that has been tossed around about an Indian that came into town, and, you know, he asked the town people if he could be buried within the walls of the town people. That's all he wanted, was to be buried with the people of the town. And when they were getting ready to move the meeting house down to the bottom of the meeting house, they ended up selling the meeting house for $1. And then they actually put the meeting house, the second and third level, on logs. And they rolled it down this hill, and they told him that if he were to help with this process, that he would be granted to be buried within the walls of the town people. So, of course, you know, he did what they asked. And the story was that he never got to be buried inside of the cemetery walls, but outside of them. And, you know, there's a little area next to the main cemetery where there's a plaque sitting there about it, about the cemetery in the town, and where the meeting house sat, and that's where he is said to be. And, you know, there's nights that we've gone in there and we would ask for contact with him and ask him, you know, what he thought about what happened. And without a fail, every time that we would start talking about him, we would turn around to see a feather sticking in the ground right next to us. And every time that we see those feathers, we would take them with us. You know, it was a gift from him, so I never felt that we shouldn't take them, so we would take them with us. And, you know, it's really sad, and I would be really sad knowing that, you know, my one wish was never granted, but yet I was taken for, you know, all this free help for one simple wish and never was, you know, given to me. So, you know, you have a spirit like that, and he, that's his right to be upset about it. And will he ever come over that, you know, overcome that? You know, maybe not. But going in there and letting him know that, you know, we accept him and, you know, stuff like that, that makes it a little bit better for him. The other spirits that we come in contact is a brother and sister. You know, like Roxy was saying, there's families that lost all of their children with the outbreak. And there's a brother and sister that just absolutely steal my heart, along with Jenny. Whenever we go in there, they will run the whole outskirt of the cemetery the whole time you're in there. You can hear them laughing and little giggles. You can hear them talking. And then you can hear them running through the leaves on the outside of the wall. And it's just, it's amazing. It's, you know, the top of the cemetery is one feeling. When you get down to the bottom of the hill is a totally new feeling. And that's with, you know, the feeling of different spirits, the temperature, wind usually picks up. And Elizabeth's tree just has this really amazing swaying sound. It just takes on a whole new life from top to bottom. And it's just, I really think that you need to see it for yourself to be able to connect and really understand those stories. And, you know, like I said, when we brought our guest in to see what we were talking about, she was absolutely taken, you know, and she loved it, and she's ready to go again. And I am more than happy to bring people in there and share, you know, stories on, you know, what we've come across. And, you know, like the gatekeeper for the cemetery that used to bring the coffins, and he is actually still in there, and he is down by the old gateway that, you know, is now reversed, and that part is closed off, but he is still down there, and he is very stern with people, and he's always watching people when they go in there. And of course, you know, because he's still looking over the cemetery, making sure that it's still being taken care of, he's doing his job, you know. But there, I went through and, you know, found a record of everybody that was buried in there, and their ages and their dates. And there's even multiple infants that are just buried but have no, you know, their name may not be on the stone, but it's on record. There's one family that I found that has four infants that passed. So sadly, every time that she had a baby, they passed. And, you know, like Roxy said, it's so, when you first walk in there, sometimes it's so sad because, you know, there are kids in there with no stones, no, nothing to represent them. And then there's other ones that are so happy that you're there and they want to interact with you and they want to make that connection with you. And that makes you feel good that you can do that for them. And, you know, I'm totally on board with that, and I'm more than willing to sit in there. And we do. We sit in there for hours on end just making connection, and it never, ever fails. We always get connection because we're polite and we're kind to them. Even when they are being rude to us, we still come back at them with politeness. And, you know, my biggest thing is when, you know, I talk to people about the cemetery is, you know, when you go up there, please, you know, be extremely respectful, because, you know, I really hold these spirits close to me. And, you know, be respectful no matter what cemetery you're going in. And, you know, make sure that you're treating them as you want to be treated. And, you know, get to know them. If you really want to go in there and see what's going on, sit down and get to know them. You know, maybe go and sit by Jenny's stone. She's right up top of the hill on the left-hand side. And, you know, sit down by her stone and talk to her and see if you start getting those feelings like we've talked about, someone holding your hand and seeing, you know, if she's going to tug at your shirt. You know, she'll tug more at your heart than probably your shirt, because I know she does for me. But I know I can't wait to get back up there and wait for Roxy to possibly have free time so that we can go back up there together.
Well, and I think you make such a good point there, because I am, it really, really upsets me when people go in to shake the cage and see if they can rattle the ghosts in there and just prove that the spirits are in there. They get everything all going, and then they just up and leave. You know, there is no consideration that these spirits used to be people, or why they're making themselves known, or how they're trying to communicate, or what's going on in there. And I can't tell you the number of cemeteries that I've come across, especially in the state of New Hampshire, where people have gone in. And, you know, one thing that they end up doing is ruining the reputation for the cemetery, because then, you know, rumors turn into more rumors, which turn into lies, and things are totally misunderstood. And, you know, you're in a hallowed ground. You're where people are buried, where their memory is, where they are, where their energy is. And if you're just going in there to rattle the cage and say, oh, look, you know, there's some ghosts here, and there's a guy hanging a tree, and, you know, you have the whole thing out of context. And I know I'm probably going off a little bit on a rant here, but I've heard a lot of that happening in this burying ground. And that really has not been my experience. You know, I like to go in and treat the spirits there with respect, see if there's anything that we can do for them, find out truly what they have to say, go back and do the research, see what I can piece together. But, you know, I really, really have an issue with people that like to just go in and rattle the cage and have this respect for those that are buried there. And certainly, you know, if you're up there, it's very dark and very quiet, and, you know, again, you're out in the middle of the woods. I don't understand people that do that. And, you know, you're not helping the spirits that are there. You're not certainly helping the reputation of the cemetery. I mean, I think one of the biggest examples of it is the Blood Cemetery, where people go in and they say that the gravestone turns upside down and there's all sorts of strange things that happen in there. And the ghost story actually is not in the cemetery. It's on the road to the cemetery where the spirits are seen. They're not even seen in the burial ground. And there's been so much vandalism and stolen stones from that cemetery, because this is how things have been out of control. And I certainly invite you, if you're looking to make connections with spirits and learn more about them, there is the proper way to go into the burying ground and do that. You know, not by stirring them up or leaving things behind to, you know, whatever you bring in the cemetery, bring out of the cemetery. And that's kind of what I'd like to say on that piece of it. But it is such an amazing cemetery, and the town itself was so interesting too, especially during the time of the American Revolution, the War of 1812. They were sending people to march. Now keep in mind, you're marching from Antrim, New Hampshire, all the way down to Lexington, Massachusetts. And, you know, when they marched, they marched. They weren't taking horse and carriage. They weren't riding horses. They marched. They walked. And, you know, today a lot of people can't even conceive of that. But these people marched down and answered the call of revolution. You had people, and it's easily documented, that were 70 years old answering the call of the War of 1812, you know, donning full uniform, walking down there and you know, answering the call of the country. And some of those people are buried in the cemetery. So, you know, when you come across unmarked graves, you know, there's no flag commemorating who these people were, and there are a lot of unmarked graves in Medi-Cal Cemetery. You know, certainly a stop in remembrance for those who have passed that have the unmarked graves is really important, and that's something that I've really started to do in Portsmouth, in two of our burying grounds, is honoring those that we don't know their story, we can't find their name, we don't know where they're buried in the cemetery, but we know they're there. I mean, we know these cemeteries were full, but maybe they couldn't afford a gravestone. So, you know, by honoring them, perhaps that, you know, helping to honor their spirit and helping soothe their spirit and doing the right thing. Because certainly some of the cemeteries that I've been into, you can tell nobody's been in these places for ages. So, you know, I kind of use that rule in all the burying grounds. You know, be respectful of those graves that you can't see that are in there. and certainly Meeting House Hill has so many graves for children that died in 1800 during an epidemic that don't have gravestones. So keep in mind there's a lot more in the burying ground than you can possibly imagine. You know, it's not just the gravestones that you see, it's the ones that you don't see as well. And I know that cemetery is full of them, you know, all the veterans that are buried there. I mean, they've been using that cemetery since 1777. So, that, you know, again, that's why I'm bringing up the Revolution and the War of 1812, because that's where they would have been buried, because it was a very active burying ground at the time. So, you know, there's so many stories to find in there. And it was so important to me when I wrote my book, Haunted Cemeteries in New England and New Hampshire Book of the Dead, just to make sure that this burying ground was listed in each of them, because I was really taken with the story and the location and the history of it. And certainly it is definitely worth a visit, but a very respectful visit at that.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I talk about how I hold the cemetery in the spirit close to me. And another reason why I think so is because that cemetery actually brought Roxy and I together. You know, I had a mutual friend contact me and tell me that there was a write-up about Antrim Cemetery and it was going to be in a book. And I'm like, oh, I'm like, I got to see who wrote it, and I want to see, you know, what information they got. And when I saw it, and then I went and Googled her name and started looking her up, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, she does ghost tours. So it was actually in the middle of the week that I found that she did cemetery ghost tours, and then I think it was, like, by that weekend, we were headed up to go on one of her tours. And then I was just kind of like a stray cat. I just never went away. But, yeah, I mean, I really can't stress enough about being respectful, because I can tell when, you know, other people have gone into the cemetery and, you know, stirred things up, and that really, really hurts me and it hurts them. So I feel right now there has been, you know, some stuff going on in there, and, you know, I'm sad about that and I'm sad for them. And I really want to help them get through that process of things that have happened. You know, one of the other things we talked about, you know, they're respecting, and if you're going to go in there because you want to know who these spirits are, go in there and just sit down and, you know, maybe with a recorder or maybe record it on your phone. But please, please, please do not go in there with a Ouija board. Do not go in there to do a seance with a Ouija board. It's going to create all things not good for everybody. So that's just kind of my little rant of the night of keeping that respectful line with that cemetery. So as we're, you know, talking, I can't get over, you know, the children and the families and Elizabeth, but, you know, there's certain parts of that cemetery that you go into, and every time that you go in there, there's always, it seems like there's a new stone that you're being drawn to, and so you're finding out what the story to that family is, and that's what brought me to, you know, finding out the family that had all the infants pass. And you just go into that area, and the mother just feels so empty, and she just feels like she's so alone, and I totally understand why she would feel that way. You know, every time that she had a child, they would pass. And obviously back then they didn't have the technology that we have now to be able to, you know, stop that or help that from being, you know, done. And so she just feels really, really alone. There are, like I said, you know, things have been stirred up in there, and there just seems like there's a really dark area of the cemetery right now. And, you know, I'm heading back there this weekend, so I'm really hoping that has kind of cleared out since I was in there. And if not, you know, I'm more open and willing to be able to sit down and spend time with these spirits and try to figure out what's going on and bring Elizabeth back out and not have her being blocked, because that's just not fair. And that could be created, you know, some people don't even know that that could happen, but it can happen. And that can actually be done from people going in there and being negative and doing negative things. So that's why Roxy and I stress so much about going in there and being respectful. You know, you wouldn't want them going into your home and disrespecting you and your home. That's pretty much how it is for them. You know, and the children that are there that don't have plaques, you know, that's really sad. That's sad that they're not being recognized, but you can definitely tell where they're all buried. You know, there's a section of the cemetery that sits up differently, and you can see the hump where the caskets would have laid. And, you know, we always, when we would go through there, you know, we always kind of, nobody seems to talk when we walk by there. And I think a lot is just like that moment of silence type thing. And they're so sad. And we've never been able to contact any of them from that area. But the only thing that we do get from there is just sadness. So I'm hoping to be able to work a little bit more on finding out who the children are that are there. You know, hopefully working off of that paperwork that I was able to find on names, and hopefully that they're the ones in there. So, you know, like I said, and Roxy's been saying, you know, with Jenny and the Indian, and there's so many stories, and if you really want to know the stories, go in there, you know, learn them yourself and see what they're giving you for their stories. You know, there's crazy stories that have gone around, and, you know, there used to be a story from that cemetery from when I was in school. And, of course, when you're in high school and someone's like, oh, you know, they said that the devil was buried in that cemetery and he comes out at night and you can see him running around the cemetery. Okay, so when you're 15, 16 years old, you're like, oh, my gosh, no way. So you want to see what's going on. So I can remember, you know, going up there at that age and going into the cemetery to see if this devil guy was running around. And obviously, you know, it wasn't true and none of it ever happened. But never did we vandalize or even think about vandalizing anything in that cemetery. And I really hope with us sharing stories of the cemetery with you guys that if you do go in, you know, to be respectful. And if you don't want to go in alone and you are local, you know, contact us. I'm local to it, so I would be more than willing to bring you up there and show you the, you know, different spots that we're able to contact and, you know, show you the connection that we have up there. When I say connection, I don't mean like, you know, that they only come up for us. I just mean the relationship that we've been able to build with those spirits. And, you know, Elizabeth is just, I truly feel she's the keeper of the whole cemetery, and she watches out for everybody in there, and she sees who comes in and comes out. And she's very protective of the children in there, extremely protective. It took a while before we even knew Jenny existed, and, you know, Elizabeth kind of brought us up that way of her stone. So she's just amazing little girl that is still, you know, running around and still wants that affection from people. But, you know, there's also men in there that have served our country. So if anything, be respectful towards them. You know, they fought for us. Their wives as well, you know, they had to be home alone with the children and go through the outbreak in town and go through the loss of money and not having the cows. And, you know, if it wasn't for their religion or the mill working, you know, it could have been a lot worse when the outbreak came through. A lot of families actually left because of the outbreak, because they're afraid that the child or children that they did have left, you know, it was going to come back again. It was going to sweep the town again. But there's just so much that is built on Antrim, the history of what brought it where it is now. And so many people don't understand how it was built. And there was a lot there, and we've had a lot of people come through this town back, you know, in the mid-1700s and through the 1800s that helped bring Antrim where it is now. And there's plenty of research out there if you're really, really interested. I know the town carries a lot of documents on things, and, you know, there's always the internet that you can go and search. And if you are curious on, you know, finding out the names or different cemeteries that are in Antrim, you can go on to, I think, believe it's antrimnewhampshire.org, and they do have an archive there that you can look through, and you can find different cemeteries, and then there's a listing on who's in what cemetery. So if you're interested in seeing the men and women and children, and, you know, what, whose family lost how many, definitely go on. And I just warn you, there's hundreds and hundreds of pages to look through. So be prepared if you do go through, and I'm sure you ran through that as well, Roxy, finding lots of pages with names.
There was a lot of information out there. I was really surprised how well documented the town was. And, you know, it's one of those things, once you start looking into town records, you don't know if there's been a fire at town hall. I can't tell you how many fires I've run into and all the records are gone, or the records were kept at the church and the church is no longer there. But Antrim has a really good record that's out there, so you can find that. And, you know, I highly recommend, depending on whatever city or town you live in and you're interested in your local cemetery, you know, go to the town archives. I know in Portsmouth we're really lucky because we have the Athenaeum, which has been around since 1817, preserving our history, which certainly makes it easy for me to do research. But when you run into a town that's done, you know, their homework and has been able to hang on to all their records over a couple hundred years, pretty amazing. And cemeteries are hard enough to research as it is, so it was really a delight to be able to find that information out there. And the geological records are out there as well for Antrim, which are, you know, getting better and better. And, I really applaud and tip my hat to those people that are out there transcribing gravestones and putting together their family trees and trying to get all the information that they can together and out there, you know, even for those folks that go out there on findagrave.com and they're taking pictures and just filling in all of the little gaps, because honestly, these gravestones, they're not going to last another 100, 200 years, and we're going to be walking through graveyards where we don't know who's buried there. So it's nice to have, you know, the hard copy records that we can go back to, and certainly now with all the electronics that are out there and everything that's available on the internet, you know, with Ancestry.com and a whole other host of sites out there containing all this information, it's great. So, you know, every little contribution helps. And that was one of the focuses for me in writing the books is, you know, at least there'll be some kind of record of the research that I've done out there for people to peruse. And trust me, honestly, you don't know who you're going to bump into. Certainly in my line of work, I bumped into descendants of people that I've written about, and they're like, well, I bought the book just because there was somebody I was related to in there, and, you know, now I've got something on it. So it's for me, that's part of the excitement of going back and finding out who these people were and piecing their stories together and really seeing how connected our communities were, because it seems like these days we're growing further and further apart from our neighbors and our towns, and, you know, we don't know who lives on our street or what our neighbors do, and, you know, it's kind of a want to get back to that in part two of, you know, keeping all of that together. But it's a great cemetery, lots of information out there, which is awesome. And if you're looking to get in touch with Carrie, you can go to www.awakennhspirits.com. You can find me at Roxy, R-O-X-I-E, the letter Z.com, or newenglandcuriosities.com. We also have a Facebook page, too, for New England Curiosities, where I post little interesting bits of history, legends, and ghost stories on there, which is a lot of fun to find stuff. And I know oftentimes I'm at the library and I'll be busy texting with Carrie and I'll be like, can't believe what I just found, I just read this. And it's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know, it's like a total geek thing, I guess. I don't know, history geek if you want to call it. But I get all excited and like, look what I just found. I found this. I forget what it was. It was like a 7-pound rat in a pickle barrel in Portsmouth, and like the whole town was up in arms over it. And I read the article and I sent it to Carrie like right away, and I'm like, look what I just had, isn't that cool? And I'm like, I don't know, I thought it was kind of cool. So yeah, so that's kind of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, you know, trying to put a name to people and a story to these places. And I know I really really enjoy that piece of it. So yeah, you know, if you're interested in research, you know, certainly, you know, looking for a place to start, feel free to contact either of us. We can definitely give you some leads and some tips to get your going, because you know, sometimes you don't know where to begin. And I know people love the genealogy of things, and that's a great place to start.
Yeah, before we go for the night, there was a time that we went up to the cemetery, and I always love the story because I will never forget the faces. It was one of, you know, when we just first started going into the cemetery, and we were down by what we now call this tree, and all of a sudden, it seemed like everybody just like froze what they were doing, and everybody got really quiet. And the biggest and brightest orb I've ever seen, like actually seen, and not in just photographs, but like in real time, comes swooping around her tree and then came down, went in between my brother and my husband. And I was just standing there with my sister, and we're both like, oh my gosh, did that just happen? You know, even my husband, like, ducked because he thought it was going to hit him. And, you know, that just shows that when you're interacting with the spirit and they come to trust you and know that, you know, you're there for good, the things that they will, you know, prove to you or show you, and they don't have anything to prove to us. Sometimes I think they like, sending us through a loop and kind of showing off and being like, oh, look what I can do, you know, kind of that, oh, you can see me and hear me, but look what I can show you. In that same night, we were on the other opposite side of the cemetery, and a bright red one comes swooping up as well, and that just amazes me of how beautiful they both were, and that they, you know, shared that with us. And it just so happened that it was a full moon night, so none of us were using flashlights, so we know it wasn't that. And, you know, a flashlight can't do what that did. And I've had people question me on this and be like, well, maybe it was just a bug through the lens. Well, nobody had a camera going. Nobody had flashlights on. You know, we're all just kind of standing there seeing what area we're going to go to next. And you didn't need a flashlight because it's so extremely bright, the way that the moon comes over that cemetery when it's a full moon, that you don't need a flashlight. You can walk that whole cemetery. You can see all the stones and the shadows. It's absolutely amazing to see that place with a full moon over it. And the children absolutely come to life more. And, you know, obviously with the full moon, activity heightens. And they definitely show us during a full moon of what they can do. But, yeah, that was just so amazing. And I think that was one of the first stories that I actually shared with Roxy about that cemetery, was when we got to see those orbs. And then, you know, the little boy's face that came up through, my husband was doing reflective photography through a glass bottle. And when he took the picture, a little boy's face appeared in the jar, and he set it on a stone, and, you know, just a random stone. He didn't happen to look to see whose stone it was, and when he looked down, and it was a little boy's stone. So, yeah, we go in there, pay your respects, be respectful, don't, you know, do anything, don't leave your print, you know, go in there and come back out, and the only print that you leave is, you know, what you leave with them. So yeah, that's what I think. I mean, there's so much more that we can talk about with the cemetery, but we're coming to an end.
Yep, there's never enough time, and if you have the opportunity to check out A Cemetery Underneath a Full Moon, I highly recommend it. So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Healing Spirit and Beyond. I must say that was scary. We will be back next Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. Probably do one of our reading shows if you tune in, and we will be scheduling some other interesting shows coming up very soon. Make sure to check us out on Facebook or visit our website. Thanks everyone for listening, and we will talk to you.